Hey guys, this is Laura Vandervoort. I played Kara Kent / Supergirl on Smallville, and you are listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and we are back with our Snyder Cut special number two with my very special guest from the Twilight Zone podcast, Mr. Tom Elliott. What's up, Tom?
How's it going, Zach? It's good to be back. This is going to be an interesting conversation. I'm really looking forward to talking about this one, so thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, the numbers weren't quite as high as we would have hoped for the last episode, so we decided to bring in Batman. So we're talking about Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice Ultimate Edition. So let me ask you this, Tom. Have you watched the theatrical cut since the theater, or is your default version the Ultimate Edition these days?
Yeah, as soon as that Ultimate Edition came out, I haven't looked back. I don't think I'll ever watch the theatrical again. I don't see the point. So, yeah, Ultimate all the way.
I don't even know why they released that on home video. Like, who would choose that? They did themselves such a disservice, right? But hey, you know, it's Snyder week. It's Snyder month. The Snyder cut's coming, right? And as I talked about on our last episode, you know, the Snyder trilogy to this point, right, has been Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and now Zack Snyder's Justice League, which is coming out this week as of the release of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And this is the connective tissue here that connects Man of Steel to the greater DCEU, because, you know, as we talked about briefly in the last podcast, you know, Man of Steel fits with kind of the Nolanverse and its own thing, and it's got a foot in, like, reality. Mm-hmm. But then you look at Batman v Superman, and they have just gone full. This is a DC Comics universe here, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love embracing the reality of those comic worlds. But it's almost as different as Batman Forever is from, like, Batman Returns to a point. Tom, what do you think?
It's funny because, like, the first, okay, if we talk about those opening scenes, I think those fit in pretty well with Man of Steel, because it takes part in that same incident that's happening in Metropolis and so on. But you're right. It's the one where they have to start pushing the envelope and bringing different things in, because they were thinking about their cinematic universe. So that's always a tough one, you know, because tonally you can just get it so wrong if you don't do that well. I mean, Marvel had it. They were panicking about Thor. How are we going to do a Thor movie, you know, because everything's so science-based. And they just ended up having to kind of go for it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. You know, they got to start pushing the envelope a bit. And they certainly do.
So I remember when this movie came out, there was, you know, some buzz about it. And how it was mixed buzz, right, about the reactions of everybody. And we go into it, I'm like, well, this, you know, it's Batman or Superman, right? How do you mess this up?
Mm.
And I sit down, and me and, you know, Lance Lester, everybody knows him, who listens to the podcast, we're watching it together, and the prologue starts, and I turn to Lance, I'm like, this is the greatest movie of all time. Like, it was really, I that's a fantastic opening. It's probably the best opening to any superhero film, because not only did, because you hear Batman's in it, you're like, okay, how is he going to come in, right? But they retroactively weave him into the events of the last film, very well done, very smartly done, very clever. But then also address the concerns that people had with the, like, well, Superman just let the whole city get destroyed, right? And they were addressing that in-universe, and I thought that was so clever and so well done, and it sets up the conflict between Batman and Superman. He looks up at the, because that point of view shot where he looks up and he sees Superman in the distance, he's like, you know, you caused this, man. That is like, get him, Batman, get this guy.
I think you're absolutely right. Those opening scenes, that first, you know, act or two acts or whatever, I think are just perfect. Affleck is so dead on as the guy who runs towards the danger while everyone else is running away.
Yes.
You know, and he just no hesitation, no fear for himself. He is Batman without the suit on. I love those scenes. No matter what happens later on, the opening, maybe third or whatever, I love it. Absolutely.
Speaking of Affleck, what's your take on him? Like, when I heard that Ben Affleck was cast as Batman, I was like, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. People were so upset, it seemed. I don't understand why they were. I mean, I like Daredevil. I mean, that's a hot take. I don't know. But the director's cut of that, too, by the way, I recommend. Speaking of director's cuts. But, you know, Christian Bale's Batman, you know, everybody liked him, but, like, that story was over. Like, if you take it, we talked about it some last time, but you can't, like, he retired twice and he's done and now he's in Paris with Catwoman. And it's, you can't bring him back out. It would not be the same.
No.
Right. Even those universes at that point still would have meshed up, right? And so we get a fresh Batman and, like, another Batman because, you know, and let's see. From 1989 to 2016, you had Keaton, Kilmer, Clooney, Bale, about this five different, in the span of 25 years, five different Batman. And, I mean, I'll say this. Ben Affleck is my favorite live-action Batman. He is... Okay, yes, I know he kills people, but we can, you know, talk about that. In the 30s, he killed people, and that's, you know, whatever, right? I just made that whole argument about how Batman shouldn't kill people, but he's in a dark place right now, Tom. Mm-hmm. You know, Robin's dead, and he's old. But what I love so much was, finally, we have a in-his-prime, maybe in his twilight, Batman, right? Because he's an established Batman. He's seen all these things. He's... The universe is, we don't have to, here he is on the first day on the job and all that. Like you said, we don't origin fatigue, right? And so all of those factors, the suit, everything about him, Affleck's performance, he's perfect to me. So I loved him.
I think it was a really smart move just to have him arrive fully formed. You know, we get a bit of his origin with his parents at the beginning, and that's fine. We all know it by now. We're all so well-versed in it. But yeah, I think it was a really good decision to have an aged up Batman with all this history. He's been working under the radar for years in Gotham, which is this, you know, this cruddier, more forgotten town. So I think that was absolutely perfect. Ben Affleck, I hate internet backlash, to be honest, because it keeps happening. And every time people get egg on their faces, you know, not every time, but I remember, just to go on a tangent for a little bit, remember internet forums? I'm sure they still exist. But
yes.
When Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker, this internet forum that I was on, everyone was like, they're pretty boy, they're going to ruin it. You know, he's in romantic comedies, all that stuff. He's going to be terrible. Then cut to like a year or so later when they made the movie and it came out and everyone is praising Heath Ledger to the high heavens. Someone on that forum had copied all of the comments from the beginning. So when someone come on there and they were like, Heath Ledger's so great, they would paste the comment that they originally made on there. And it was just the beautiful kind of answer to what we get all the time, you know, with casting. And I always think, you know what? You're not privy to what the casting people have seen. You know, the tests they've done. You know, they've put him in the suit probably by now. All this stuff has happened and you've not seen it. So all this backlash. And they do get casting wrong sometimes. We'll talk about a big casting they got wrong in this one.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, a lot of the time they do know what they're doing. And I think... Affleck was at the perfect time of life, perfect for this movie.
Yeah, I never understood why people didn't want him to be in it. I think Daredevil, maybe. It's such a trendy thing to hate Daredevil. Yeah. Do you like Daredevil, like the movie?
I liked it. Again, it's not... It's flawed. It probably holds up less now. If I watched it now, considering what came between, it would probably be a bit, you know, not the best. And there was some stuff in there that was really weird, like the way he could jump so far, but that wasn't really part of Daredevil's powers and stuff. But at the time, you know, we only had, I think, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Maybe we'd had the X-Men as well. But it wasn't the...
The first X-Men, yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't the landscape that we have now. And you kind of take what you can get in those times.
Mm-hmm. So you get the... And I'm like, all right, we got a Superman who's established. You get a Batman here. I still hold that... As brilliant as the introduction the Batman was in this film, like I wish he would have had his own movie because then it would have felt more balanced. Like, you got your Superman movie here, you got your Batman movie there. Now they're going to meet up together. And I know that's the Marvel way, but I mean, I feel like DC did the opposite thing just to be like, well, we can't be like Marvel. And they had their own heroes all set up. We got to introduce them all the same movie. And, you know, and I say that. But, you know, Ben Affleck is great in this. Gal Gadot is great in this as Wonder Woman, right? I mean, who would have thought? Like, you tell me Batman vs. Superman's coming, your favorite part's going to be Wonder Woman. She's fantastic. And that's some great casting for Zack Snyder, for both of them. I had never seen her in anything. She'd been in some Fast and Furious movies and stuff. But that true unknown for Gal Gadot.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and I don't know whether we're getting ahead of ourselves into a talk about how they approached it. But I think Man of Steel was a good start. And the thing that made things start tumbling down was trying to make everything so soon, you know? Yes, Marvel had done what they had done, but they'd also given them a template that was easy to work from. But it was the decisions that some of the story points in this movie, they do too soon. Bringing Batman in probably too soon, much as I enjoy the interactions.
Right.
And it's Batman versus Superman, but then you got Wonder Woman in it as well. And it's like...
And Doomsday. Yeah, I mean,
exactly. Exactly.
The death of Superman.
So they wanted their Avengers payday, you know, before they put the groundwork in. And that was always the problem, because making those decisions just kind of compromise their product, I think. And the ironic thing is that they made the Aquaman and Wonder Woman movies later on, and they were huge hits, you know? Yeah. If they'd have just done them first, people would have cared about the characters a bit more and probably went to see Justice League, you know? So, I don't know.
It's tough, man. It's I know there was like this 5-movie plan, but I don't know. I just, like, Zack Snyder, he's a company guy, and he says the right things. He's been great in the press. The whole for all the things that have happened to him, he's been a professional. And he does say the Batman was his idea, although it seems like such a studio boardroom, like, well, Batman's popular, right? Can we put him in this? I mean, that's what it seems like. Because where's your Superman trilogy? You know, like, Batman got a trilogy. Give us a Superman trilogy and then build to this. Because you can't go back, because we all want to see more Superman movies, but how do you go back to just that after all this? I don't know. I mean, it's not like a TV show where you have your season finale and it's a big deal in season premiere, and then you go back to your day-to-day kind of episodic stuff. This is like, we just killed Superman and brought in the Justice League. You can't have a little adventure with Superman and Metallo and the Daily Planet staff, you know, in movie two anymore. So.
I know, and that's what I want so much, you know? And I really fear that we'll never get it now. But that is kind of what I want so much. I want to see Clark, you know, doing a bit of report. And we see a bit of it in this, doing a bit of report and hanging out with Lois, you know, hearing something in the distance, so going and getting changed in the closet. And, you know, I want to see all that. Because there's such a rogues gallery that we haven't seen in live action, you know, Brainiac, Metallo, you know, whoever. And I really want it, and I fear that we're never going to get it. And you're right, there should have been a Superman trilogy. You know, maybe you could have had your Justice League after the second movie once they'd established the others as well, but I don't know. It's no use crying over spilt milk, I guess.
Right. Cause, you know, Batman Begins didn't make $1 billion, but guess what? The Dark Knight did, right? And then, you know, Dark Knight Rises. And so you gotta give some things time to breathe. I'm sure if they would have made a Superman Returns sequel, had a little patience with that would have done well, because people were hyped about a sequel. So I don't know. I just feel like WB always pushes the wrong buttons when it comes to Superman on the big screen, unfortunately. So
yeah.
And you talk, and this is okay. So let's get into this then. Talk about the Rogues Gallery. Talk about casting. You know, for every Heath Ledger and Michael Keaton, right? Like, good job.
Yeah.
You got lightning in a bottle. But why invite that? Why not just cast like Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, slam dunk casting, everybody, mm-hmm. you know? But why invite the controversy? Why try to outsmart like the casting and cast someone like Jesse Eisenberg mm-hmm. as Lex Luthor? Now, as I understand it, he came in to do Jimmy Olsen because that thinking was, oh, we'll get okay. a big name to be Jimmy Olsen uh-huh. and he'll get killed off. I'm like, oh, whoa, you know. Michael Cassidy from Smallville fame, he was in season 7 of Smallville, by the way. He played a clone of Lex's brother, but I move on. That's kind of a spoiler, but whatever.
Like an encyclopedia for this stuff, man. I love it.
So Jesse Eisenberg came in and the signer was like, hey, wait a minute. What if he cast you as Lex Luthor? And okay, he'd come off The Social Network, Mark Zuckerberg. That's the, as the 80s Lex Luthor was Donald Trump, the 21st century Lex Luthor is Jesse Eisenberg. We get it, right? These mm-hmm. are the templates for these characters. And that's fine. But that's not the Lex Luthor I wanted, mm-hmm. especially after watching Michael Rosenbaum, who was perfect for many years on Smallville. And, you know, people who listen to me always know I say this, Billy Zane, man, Billy Zane is out there and he's yet to play Lex Luthor. And people say, you just like him because he's bald. You know what? You're right. He looks exactly like the comic Lex Luthor. I'm sorry, right? I'm sorry that that's a strike against him. He looks just like the character. But also, he has an awesome voice, a great screen presence. He's the villain in Titanic and does a really good job. If you see him in other stuff, I think he'd be perfect. And mm-hmm. the fact that he keeps getting passed over time after time, I know a lot of the times, there's a lot of buzz around Bryan Cranston. He would have been good because who doesn't love Bryan Cranston? Bryan Cranston's fantastic. But I don't know, like I don't think he would have been a slam dunk, no. but he would, anyone would have been better than Jesse Eisenberg for this. I complete miscast, although as I've rewatched it, I've kind of learned to kind of like appreciate what they were going for, like his kind of quirkiness and his puns. I'm like, and I realize this is like, if I were Lex Luthor, I would be this. Hey, what's up, guys? Right. So I don't know, man. For that, Batman, Superman, Lex Luthor, like my three favorite comic characters, uh-huh. and this is the only time we see them all together. So I've come to appreciate it what it is, but I'm like, this is. It's a valid interpretation, right? Because he's the head of LexCorp and all that. And he's the son of Lex Luthor. So is that your loophole, guys, Lex Luthor Jr.? Anyway, all that to say, Tom, a big miss, in my opinion. That is a huge strike against this movie. So,
well, I think there are two aspects to it. There is one that they're trying to give us a different Lex Luthor, who is in fitting with modern times, you know, your Mark Zuckerbergs or your Bitcoin millionaires or, you know, the sort of young, up-and-coming, tech-savvy. Okay, so it's a choice. It's a choice, you know? Fine. But then there's also the performance. And even if you're going to do that young, tech-savvy Lex Luthor billionaire, I just don't think the performance was right. It might have been better if he'd have just played it a bit straighter, but as... Clark Kent. And it's just, what are you doing? What are you doing? I
love it.
Yeah. I just really, there was, like you, I've just learned to tolerate it, but it really killed the movie for me early on, you know? And because I don't think we've had the ultimate Lex Luthor in the movies yet. You know, I agree with you about Rosenbaum. He's great. But Hackman was very much of his time, and he was enjoyable, but he was the pure criminal Lex Luthor, you know.
And to be fair, what I always defend Superman the movie with, although it's a complaint of mine, same as yours, that was before the crisis on uh-huh. Infinite Earths back yeah. in the day when they reinvented Lex Luthor. So there was no template to ignore mm-hmm. like there has been with all the other ones.
Yeah, yeah. And Spacey was kind of following on a bit from Hackman. And I liked Spacey well enough. But even then, I was kind of wishing they'd gone with the businessman Lex Luthor, the Lex Luthor who has the means to fight Superman in different ways. The Lex Luthor who is disgusted that, you know, he has had to make himself into this powerful person, whereas Superman has just been, you know, just plopped onto the planet and everyone's given him the attention. You know, there's so much you can do with that. And that's what I really wanted. Do you remember Ant-Man, the Marvel movie? Mm-hmm. The villain in the first. You probably won't be able to put his face into your mind. And yes, it's probably because he's bald. But he would have made a good Lex Luthor as well. So I just think, it's such a miss. Such a miss. Really bad.
Well, they're just, we could list off about 25 yeah. people who would have been better. Because the thing, Zack Snyder, he does such a good job casting so many of these characters, right? Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, who he cast as Aquaman, who goes on to play Aquaman, like a very outside the box casting, but they made it work, right?
Yeah.
And you miss so hard on on Lex Luthor. It's essential. Michael Shannon is odd. We were just talking about that. Russell Crowe, like you go to the whole cast of Man of Steel, Lawrence Fishburne. Mm-hmm. And Lawrence Fishburne is great again in this one. I think he had the best laughs in this movie, by the way. So we're never going to see him again, Tom. I guess, you know, he's going to be Justice League, you know, so yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah. So I just, man, like, it sucks because like that as much as I've, as you said, tolerated it and I defend it as a valid interpretation. Like he's a quirky CEO guy in charge of LexCorp, which is, hey, mm-hmm. more than I can say for the other, you know, a lot of the other versions we've gotten. But it's not the one I wanted. It's not the one we needed. Is it that much to ask to have an off-the-page Lex Luthor? Because I think it's more distracting mm-hmm. when you have off-the-page Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, right? To various degrees, okay?
Yeah.
And then you have this out of nowhere. It's like Jared Leto's Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, what? Like, like, you know, Ben Affleck, it's like, you know, looks and acts, and then the killing, right? But he's depressed and end of his career, mm-hmm. you know, asterisk, right? Off-the-page Batman. And then you have this guy over here. I'm like, no. Give me like the traditional, like I think Willem Dafoe would have been a great Joker, but that's a conversation we're going to have next time we talk about the DCU. So.
I think picture that scene where Clark and Bruce meet at the party for the first time and they are just crackling off each other. Affleck especially is just great, you know. I love him in that scene. He's just so effortlessly.
Don't believe everything you read, son.
Yeah, effortlessly cool and in control of the situation. And I've always loved it in the comics. There's been all kinds of interpretations, but I've always enjoyed it in the comics when there is a bit of friction between Batman and Superman, you know? And it's not out-and-out fighting like in The Dark Knight Returns or something, but it's just like, you know, they disagree with each other's methods and they will bicker a lot. So I am eating this stuff up. And then Lex comes over and he's like, strong handshake and all that business. And I just think if you had an actor who could stand toe-to-toe with these guys, you know, this trio of men, I think it would have made the scene crackle even more, you know, but you've got him just sort of prancing over. Oh, man. anyway.
Oh, man. And that's the thing, right? It was a big turnoff when I first saw it. I've come to like Batman vs. Superman more now over time. Because when I first saw it, I was like, man, that was depressing. And they didn't need to do all that. And where are we now, right? Because, I mean, jumping all around here, right? But they play Amazing Grace at the end. I'm like, oh, yeah, because remember Star Trek 2 and they killed Spock? We're doing the same thing. I understand Amazing Grace is played all the time. I'm just saying, like, in a big sci-fi movie, when you kill off a main character, that's the first thing I think of. And I felt nothing. Like, I've said this before. I felt more when Groot died.
Yeah.
In Guardians of the Galaxy. I literally get choked up. He's like, we are Groot. I'm like, he said we. Like, you know, there's so many emotions there. And when Superman died, I'm like, oh, I guess we're doing this now.
Just
you know, the second movie, Tom.
Yeah, too soon. I mean, that was such a landmark in the comics, wasn't it? And to have
that's
it.
That's a trilogy. You could do a trilogy of movies about that.
Yeah, to have it before we even care about the guy, you know, was just such a mistake. And plus, you're going to make Justice League next. So you've got to kind of, oh, we've got to get him alive again somehow, you know. such a mistake. And this is what I was talking about the decisions start to really go wrong, you know, instead of just letting these things breathe. He's always running towards the payday, you know. The Dark Knight Returns, I hope someone makes that movie one day, but Zack Snyder's just stolen all the imagery from it for this one already, you know? All those beats are still there. So, yeah, just such a bad choice. Killing Superman before the world loved him was killing Superman before we loved him. So, terrible choice.
Well, you can't... I understand that you're not going to make a page-by-page, you know, panel-by-panel adaptation of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just mash up World's Finest, which is Batman and Superman, Death of Superman,
yeah,
and Dark Knight Returns in the same movie. You mm-hmm. can't do it. It doesn't work, right? And there's so many... This movie is so much less than the sum of its parts, because I love a lot of it. I love the opening. I love Affleck. I love everything about Gotham City and mm-hmm. his world. I love branding the criminals. I think a darker, kind of lost his way Batman would do that. I love Jeremy Irons as Alfred. Mm. I love the interplay between those guys. That, you know, got too old to die young, right? And that's great dialogue. I love how Bruce Wayne, you know, he's kind of a drunk, but he kind of acts like, you know, he's got issues, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I love the performance Bruce Wayne has put on. The secret identity. Bruce Wayne gets to be more of a secret identity than Clark Kent did in these movies. That's a shame.
Yeah.
I like those shoes. It's great stuff, right? I'm going to see Clark have some fun like that. And so when Batman is bringing the fun instead of Superman, I think you have a problem somewhere in your movie, right? So, I don't know. I've come to like this one more. But again, it's just so... Why is it so hard to be a fan, Tom, with this? This movie is such a microcosm of this, right? So
I've come to accept it a lot as well. And, you know, I'll say right now, I like it. And I've had to kind of work mm-hmm. through some stuff to get
I'm currently
get
working
here.
Through it, but yes. Yeah.
But I do like it. But what I like is because they are dealing with the fallout of Superman, and we've seen the kind of military response, now it's the political response. And again, I find this so fascinating and so true. Marvel touched on it a little bit, I think, in after the second Avengers movie. But if Superman turned up now, can you imagine what the world would be like? You know, everyone has an opinion on everything. Half the world would be saying he shouldn't be doing what he's doing. Half the world would be saying he should be doing what he's doing. There would be, you know, podcasts about it, constant news stories about it. And I think this movie gets it dead on, that response to, look, this is what's happened. It's his fault. And I love that about it. Again, it makes for a very tonally serious movie. There's not much fun. There is a little bit, but I think it's justified. And that's why I think at the end of it, it was such a mistake to kill him, when this should have been a turning point, really. This should have been where Superman saves the day and where people start to trust him and we can start to have a bit more fun with it. But instead they kill him off at the end. But the response to the first movie and the real world aspect of, you know, killing Superman by media, I really like it.
Yeah, there are definitely threads here that are worth exploring that you have mm-hmm. about three or four, like beyond just the comic book stories you took and put in here, like there are three or four movies worth of material. And, you know, not to speak too much about this because it's, you know, it's in the past, right? But like the choice to do the theatrical cut versus the ultimate edition
mm-hmm.
really shot the movie in the foot. Like it's another 45 minutes or so, but that makes a huge difference with making the plot make any sense. Because then you're like, oh, see, you respect Lex Luthor's plan more when you understand, like, oh, okay, he had these secret bullets and they faked with the flamethrowers. Because you're like, what, does the government, because in the theatrical cut, you're like, does the government think Superman shot all these people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? And you see how they set up the missile strike and, you know, or orchestrated the events of these things. Now, we do have more of Superman, like, not caring about people, like, I've seen Superman disarm someone with Lois Lane at gunpoint about 100 times in my life, and you didn't need to fly the guy through a wall. Yeah, so it kind of sets the tone like, oh, okay, this is the reckless Superman still. To your point last time, that there is the dialogue like, we're going to go to the port. It's an abandoned part of the city, right? Yeah. They're like, okay, we know, guys. We messed up last time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, everything is a response to the last movie, right? But it's kind of the same stuff, like, you know, the big ending with the CGI, like like it was great seeing Wonder Woman show up, mm-hmm. right? That was awesome, and we'd never seen her on a big screen before, and I think Gal Gadot was perfect right out of the box, yeah. And even her fun interplay with Bruce Wayne was cool, right? He's tracking her down. But it's you look at the finale of a movie called Batman versus Superman. You look at the finale. Batman is, and I laugh at it now. It's fun, right? Mm-hmm. Much like I laugh at Man of Steel throwing around tankers and blowing up buildings. I laugh at this. Batman is just running around trying not to get killed by Doomsday. That is his only function.
Yeah. He's just hiding. He's the Hawkeye in this thing. He's just like, yeah. Oh. Poor fella. But maybe, I don't know your thoughts on this, but maybe one of the mm-hmm. best Batman scenes ever put on film is when he's going to rescue Clark's mom. And
oh, fantastic.
You know, just, I mean, he has a couple of good fight scenes, like one of the dream sequences where he's got the coat on and the cowl on, and I love that too. But he's shooting people left, right, and center there.
Well, it's the post-apocalyptic future, so yeah. We're going to give him a break on that one. But
that warehouse raid, you know, and I'm sure couple of people probably died off that as well, but but it's beautifully done.
They're fine. They just got knocked out.
yeah.
No, that was fantastic. That's the kind of Batman action that we had always wanted to see. You know, in the Burton movies, we love those, but it wasn't very well. Tim Burton is not an action director, right? Mm-hmm. And then the way Chris Nolan directed things, like very like choppy and lots of cuts, and that's the way he liked to do it. But then you didn't really see Batman's prowess, you know. And here I'm like, this guy is a beast. This guy is not to be trifled with. I mean, even in The Dark Knight, it's funny, you know, you have him fighting Ra's al Ghul in the first movie and Liam Neeson and this master of martial arts, right? And then he has trouble with like a couple of Joker goons with knives in their shoes. And the next one, you're like, come on, Batman, where's your martial arts skills? But it was so satisfying to see. This is the animated series Batman. This is the Arkham Asylum Batman video game come to life. And the Batman action scene we always wanted to see. Absolutely.
Tom. Definitely. And I know there's this question about him killing people and stuff like that. It's one that it's not that I mind him so much doing it. But it's hard to kind of reconcile that with him being so close to the Commissioner Gordon and stuff and having that relationship, because look, at the end of the day, people die from one punch sometimes, you know, it happens, you know, a fight in a pub or something, couple of guys squaring up to each other, one punches the other and he's dead, you know, they didn't intend to kill him, but it happens, you know, they'll fall over, bang their head on the floor, and they're dead. Now, Batman punches about 50 people a night, you know? By the law of averages, he's going to kill someone. So I don't mind so much that it happens, but it's hard to reconcile because I don't think Commissioner Gordon or law enforcement in general would be happy to just let that go. You know, if someone kills someone in prison, you know, they still get dealt with, you know what I mean? So it's just hard to kind of reconcile.
Well, see, and that's the motivation for Superman to not like Batman, right? Because Lex Luthor has orchestrated this whole thing. He co-ops this Wayne Enterprises employee. Right? I'm like, it's a very smart plan. Again, the writing and the performance is a whole other category about what Lex is doing, but divorce yourself from the two from each other. And you're like, oh, okay. Orchestrated plan by Lex Luthor to pit Batman and Superman against each other. Brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's getting criminals and, you know, the brand of the bat, they're getting killed in prison. But Superman's like, oh no, Batman's, you know, he's gone too far, you know. So this leads to their conflict. Batman hates Superman. His motivations make sense. The kryptonite, I love him stealing the kryptonite from Lex and making the weapons. That's so like 1% chance. We got to take it as an absolute certainty. I'm like, yeah, Batman, get him. And, you know, Superman, you know, sees that, you know, but, and again, the ultimate addition. You see more Clark Kent investigating. He finds out more about what Batman's been doing. You see, he's like, well, this isn't right. I got it. Someone has to do this. Like, I think Perry White's even says, no one cares about Clark Kent taking on the Batman, but people care about Superman taking on the Batman. Right. And that's so again, there's things here that work so well, but then the ultimate reason and payoff doesn't fit any of the setup. One, they kidnap Martha Kent and that's why Superman has to go fight Batman. And but no, he was supposed to go fight him because of the, you know, he wanted him to stop doing what he was doing. And then, of course, there's the Martha scene. So for Man of Steel, I went down the list and I was like, all the things people complain about, they don't bother me. for this movie, pretty much all the things people complain about, I agree I agree with them. Because that is like, that was a unique bit of trivia that comic nerds like ourselves knew, that like Martha Wayne, Martha Kent, that's a cool thing.
Mm.
But then to make it the crux of why Batman wouldn't kill Superman, it doesn't fit with me. It's a meme for a reason, and it will never get old. So how do you take it, Tom?
I think I'm a bit more agreeable with it, to be honest. It never bothered me that much. I think the thing is, because you can say it quite flippantly, where it's like, yeah, okay. So Superman says Martha, and Batman goes, Martha, why are you saying that name? And she says, it's his mom. You know, there's a depth to that. It's the thing that snaps him out of it. Oh, this is a person here. He's got a family. He's got a mother. And, you know, I've got a mother too. You know, my mom was called Martha, blah, blah, blah. So I think there is a depth to it. But you can also say it like, oh, your mom's called Martha as well? Oh, mine too, you know?
Did we just become best friends?
So you can kind of read it both ways. I go with the heart of it, but I get where you're coming from, man. I get where you're coming from.
I hear that explanation, but just before that, when Batman is dragging him across the floor, he's like, I bet your parents told you were here for a reason. I'm like, his parents, but he's just telling him that he has parents. So I don't know. The problem is, what is the resolution to that of their fight? Dark Knight Returns is a whole nother context. It's a whole nother end game, a whole nother situation being played out there. And this is like, well, like they have to make up somehow. And I don't know. It was so like out of nowhere, and then it's become such a meme. And I don't know. You're right. This, like, we've been talking about this in our conversations, isolating things from the internet phenomenons that surround them is tough. So we'll see. But I have grown to like this movie more, and I do defend it more than I did before. Because I don't know, like, I as much as you hear me sitting here nitpicking, it comes from a place of love, because I love these characters.
Yeah.
And I love a lot of what they're putting up here. And I'm like, oh, could you just another pass at the script, and maybe we could have done this or that, right? Because I don't know, man.
You're absolutely right, and I like this. I've grown to like it more. Coming back to it, it was the same as coming back to Man of Steel, where I was like, okay, you know what? I accept it for what it is now, and just enjoy what I enjoy from it. But it is that I think they were hamstrung with the decisions that they had to make, the things that they had to put in. You know, but then it was compounded with other bad decisions as well, like bringing Doomsday in. Doomsday is someone you build up to. And like you said, you know, we don't have to be, you know, completely on track with the comics. But I kind of felt that this was the equivalent of Bane being the henchman in Batman and Robin, you know what I mean? Where he's that dumb henchman, where he was one of the, you know, the most dangerous Batman villains of all time. He's the man who broke the bat, but now he's just like sort of hanging around with Poison Ivy and he can't even talk. And I know Doomsday could never talk, but what I mean is just to use him in such a throwaway way, you know? And it's those decisions that I think really bring it down, which is a shame because the foundation is just so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just limitless story potential after the controversies of Man of Steel. And this movie, that's what's so frustrating. Like, a lot of the movie, they recognize that and they capitalize on it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I think the real turning point is when Lex Luthor blows up the Capitol, right? Mm. And I think at that point, they start to kind of go off track because all these machinations have led up to this or that, right? And then, like, that seems to be like a climax point. But then after that, stuff starts to not hold together as well. And, Yeah, it's, you know, Superman saving people, right? In the Ultimate Edition, you see him saving people at the Capitol, and then the people that are working, they're like, hey, we got it. You know, they're like, hey, go, man, you're the reason this happened, go away. Like, you get more of that vibe, which is important, unlike, you know, the theatrical cut where he's standing there crying and you never see him. Like, way to go, Superman. Like, why don't you move it and save some people? I want to give the movie credit where when Doomsday is born, he comes out and he's going to punch Lex Luthor and Superman stops him and saves Lex, that is a very Superman moment, right? Mm. He saves, you know, his arch nemesis here who orchestrated all these horrible things, kidnapped his mom, was going to kill him. He still saves him from this monster. I'm like, that is it's a subtle thing, but it's a very Superman thing. I give it credit there. Absolutely. I love that. Again, there's little bits and pieces here. Like, I can complain about this. I love that, this, that. But I'll tell you, I point to this a lot when I'm like, man, this version of Superman is wrong to me, you know?
Okay.
Not quite the not my Superman thing, but like, this is the thing I zero in on. When he tells Lois, when he thinks he has to go kill Batman, he's like, no one stays good in this world. I was like, okay, I don't want to be one of those people, but Superman would never say that. So.
Yeah. I hear you. I hear where you're coming from. It's a very sad Superman movie, you know? He barely cracks a smile in this thing. It's very serious.
But I love Batman. I love Wonder Woman. I love so much stuff around it. I'm like, that's the thing with the DCU. I'm like, well, other than the Superman stuff they chose to do, I'm, you know, pretty on board with a lot of the stuff.
Yeah. I think it's like you said, you know, a lot of it just look at it on its own and it's great, you know? But there's just too much of it in one movie. And this is, God, I think, is it about 3 hours?
Yeah, the ultimate cut is about 3 hours long. Yeah.
And I don't mind that now because I think it's probably the last time we're going to see these guys together on screen apart from the Justice League.
Very unfortunate, but true. Yeah, and that has made me like it more too. I'm like, well, if you like this, this is all you're going to get from it. So, but talking about wedging too much in, right? I mean, you know, they had to cut a lot of time out for the theatrical cut. Here's what you cut out. As cool as that nightmare sequence was and that apocalyptic future, that needs to be the first thing to go because it didn't lead anywhere. Now, Zack Snyder's Justice League, apparently that's going to pay off and we'll see because the Flash time travel and all that stuff. But sitting there in the theater, like, what the hell did I just watch? Like, the Flash shows up and I'm like, I couldn't even tell it was the Flash because we haven't met him yet.
I thought it was Robin. You know, I thought it was Robin.
Robin, okay.
Because I didn't know Ezra Miller from Adam at that point, you know, and he had, you know, the mask going down. And I thought, is he having a dream about Robin or something?
Very confusing. And then like an awesome sequence in the future there, but I don't know what it means. Like, it was a bunch of cool stuff to put in the trailer, right? Yeah, evil Superman coming in, he's vaporizing people, he's ripping off Batman's mask. That's a trope I'm tired of, frankly, the evil Superman. But we'll see, you know. I don't know. I'm very interested to see. This really could be improved by Zack Snyder's Justice League with that kind of closing the circle on that.
Yeah.
Because when you see the theatrical, you're like, well, what was even the point of that? That was never going to happen. But now we've seen in the trailers, right? They brought back Jared Leto's Joker, you know, for those. And so we'll see. But that should not have been in here. Also, one of the worst, like, momentum stopping scenes in any film is Wonder Woman watching what I referred to the viral marketing material for the Justice League movie on her laptop.
It's Again, they've got to start putting this stuff in now because they're trying to get to that payday so quickly that they need to start sewing those things in. But there's enough there's enough going on without it, isn't there? You know?
The Wonder Woman picture is fine. That's one thing that ties into her character, that ties into her movie that's coming up, right? That's fine, because that's the kind of stuff you'd see in a Marvel movie. Like, oh, is the Tesseract here and it's there, the cube, whatever. But to have all those videos, and Lex Luthor apparently made the logos for the heroes too on his hard drive. And, you know, if you think about it, it's just,
yeah.
Like, what are you doing, man? I just, it's tough. And so this is why this one is tougher for me. Although I think I probably enjoy watching this one more because I love Ben Affleck's Batman so much and this is his time to shine. But still, man, you got to sit here and you got to just fight for every story point and everything. It's just tough. So.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed watching it today. I really did. But I think what we were saying about, I mean, I guess we'll talk about our hopes and dreams for what might come next time. So we won't get too ahead of ourselves, but now I have that horrible feeling that this is probably it. This is probably the only time we're going to see Batman and Superman in a movie together. And for all its faults, you know, there were some beautiful interactions in here. And I'll take that, you know, I'll take that because I don't think I'm going to get any more. And, you know, there might be something else down the line, but I don't know. I just think they had such a good shot here to make a really good DC Extended Universe, but they just tried to run before they could walk. So I got to kind of take this and just enjoy it, because I think that's all we're going to get, you know?
Yeah. I mean, eventually you just, I mean, we enjoy Superman 3 and 4 now for the same reasons, right?
Well, maybe not 4.
We draw the line somewhere.
We're not savages. Come on.
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff here. I wish Lois Lane, I noticed a pattern in this movie. Lois Lane, she'd always be like running and showing up right when things were happening. Like she has this knack for, oh, what's going on? Like at the end of Man of Steel, she just runs and shows up and sees, you know, him kill Zod. I'm like, okay. But this one, she just runs and shows up and Batman about to kill Superman and then runs and gets the spear and, right, you know, all these kinds of things. And, you know, Amy Adams is an Academy nominated actress. And I feel like, again, the Ultimate Edition served her much better because she Lois Lane on a story doing some investigation. Like that's the only time we're going to get any Daily Planet flavor of these movies.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
because she was in the theatrical Justice League and she will be in the Zack Snyder Justice League, but I can't see a very big role for her when you have, you know, five other superheroes in these things, right? So
yeah, I'm starting to get sad now, Zach.
Starting to make me sad.
Because that is the problem. There's just so much potential here, so much done right, that I think is unfortunately going to be a waste now, you know?
Mm-hmm. But on that note,
yeah.
But you know, once you accept like the Jesse Eisenberg, what he is, like, I do like a lot of his dialogues. Like he's kind of a spaz. And so, but he goes on these rants where he's like, you know, the fastest way to Superman is a pretty little road called Lois Lane. And then he's, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's not the Lex Luthor that I really wanted, but like I can appreciate things I didn't like initially now. But there's some things that I will never agree with let's get it. Little clips of Aquaman and the Flash and stuff in this movie, Cyborg. What make us care about these characters and want to go see them again in those movies instead of like, here's some other stuff? Because, like you said, you thought the Flash was Robin. Like, you know, people like us might know who Aquaman and stuff is, but like to the general audience, like, what are we, who is this and what is that? And like, it means nothing. And I've seen that in blockbusters these days. There seems to be what they think is fan service. But it's not. It annoys people like me, perhaps you, maybe not as much, but annoys people like me. And then to quote unquote general audiences, that means nothing. Yeah. It's like, my name is Khan, Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm like, really? And everyone else is like, who? And who is happy with that? You know, after lying to us about it, J.J. Abrams, right? So that's what those are the things that I see in Blockbuster today that are like, this movie is also guilty of that kind of stuff.
I get you. Absolutely. You know, I'm not immune to it either. It annoys me sometimes as well. So yeah, I'm not immune to it.
You know, I did mention Jimmy Olsen, Michael Cassidy, who played him, getting shot in the head. That upset a lot of people. Like, okay, I will go back to my list about Man of Steel things that didn't upset me that seems to upset the internet, right? I don't like that. First of all, I don't think that was the real Jimmy Olsen. That was an FBI guy in disguise using a pseudonym. We weren't going to get to that character. So let's have a guy pose as a photographer, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the Ultimate Edition, right? Again, it helps the story. The guy shows up and Lois is like, who are you? You're not my normal guy, right? So that's not Jimmy Olsen. We didn't kill him in the head. People get so offended by that. Since when do people like want to ride or die with Jimmy Olsen, right? I mean,
I know. I couldn't care less about Jimmy Olsen personally.
So, I mean, I don't want to see him brutally killed, but I don't think that's him either. So it's like my point with that is like, there are plenty of things to dissect and discuss here in this movie, but there are plenty of other things that aren't. And I feel like people just make mountains out of molehills when they're already mountains to discuss. So I don't know, man. Yeah. I will enjoy for the rest of my life talking about these things for as much as they might frustrate me sometimes. And there's some great stuff in here. And like I said, I just think it's less than the sum of its parts because there's some out of context, some A+ stuff. But when you put it all together, the puzzle pieces do not fit for this one, unfortunately. So
any criticism that people have, I can probably go, I see where you're coming from. I think I have made my peace with those things now. I mean, Jesse Eisenberg,
Heisenberg is right. I know, yeah.
he's the toughest thing to kind of come to terms with. But I've made my peace with it. I enjoy this movie now. I still find it very rewatchable. You know, it makes me a little sad for what we should have had, but I kind of dig it. I really still enjoy it.
Yeah, and you know, wrapping it up here, being the Smallville podcast we are, I got to call out when Lex gets his head shaved. It is exactly like when Lionel Luthor gets his head shaved at the end of season 3 of Smallville. He is sitting in prison in the orange suit. He's like, "Do it," and he shaves his head, and that's how we got this bald Lex Luthor. Also, the scene where Clark goes and talks to Ghost Jonathan is like exactly like a scene from the season 10 premiere of Smallville. It's so funny to see like these people just watching Smallville and taking scenes out, but. I mean, it was a surprise cameo, right? Jonathan Kent, seeing him there, Kevin Costner. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it meant. I mean, it would seem to be like, you're a hero, but other people suffer, but that's how being a hero is. I mean, that's kind of the gist of it. but I am kind of sick. Another trope I'm sick of is like people seeing ghosts and having conversations with them. And like when they're not really, when you're talking to yourself, you need to go up to a mountain to do that. It just... You could have removed that and would not have affected anything. I guess that conversation with Jonathan, quote unquote conversation and quote unquote Jonathan, is what inspired him to go back because he quit, right? After he talked to Lois and then he came back to save her. It just seemed like another detour we didn't need to go on.
Yeah, it is a bit hokey. I think the Spider-Man movies did it as well, the Tobey Maguire ones. I think Uncle Ben came back, yeah, didn't he? You know, and it's just
that
like
fits those movies better though, I think, Tom. I'm just saying the hokiness maybe is kind of built into those more so in this uber gritty realistic. Oh, and I'm talking to my ghost dad over here, by the way.
Yeah, maybe because it's just not something that I've ever done, you know, when I had a chat to Uncle Harry who died 10 years ago because I'm having a bit of trouble with something, you know what I mean? It's not personally something I've done. I'm not saying, you know, there's anything wrong with it. But,
right.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of trope.
But yeah, lots of Smallville in here. And, you know, Doomsday on Smallville, he might have looked more like Doomsday than this Doomsday. I'll let people decide that.
What was he in Smallville, man? I never watched that far. I watched
so
it
that was season 8.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of people didn't make it that far, Tom, so don't feel bad. He's basically a werewolf kind of person. Like, Sam Witwer plays the character, Davis Bloom. He's a paramedic, but he has blackouts and he becomes Doomsday. And he was built from genetic material that Zod made on Krypton.
Wow.
Zod and Feora, actually, in the Smallville universe. And he was attached to Clark's ship. It was a huge retcon, by the way. But he was attached to the Clark ship and all this. And the whole season 8, they were thinking season 8 would be the last season at the time.
Mm.
And so they're building towards, you know, okay, Doomsday will be now the first thing Superman fights instead of the last thing it kills. I'm like, okay, I can fly with that.
Yeah.
No pun intended. And then they got renewed, so they quickly kind of had to rewrite the season finale and all that. The season finale, it's the season 8 finale, it's called Doomsday. It literally made me stop watching Smallville for half a season. Now, don't get me wrong.
Oh, wow.
I DVR'd all the episodes, and Lance and I binged season 9, the first half of it. But I was so disappointed with what they led to. Talk about killing Jimmy Olsen brutally. Spoilers here. The character who we thought was Jimmy Olsen on Smallville for 3 years gets brutally murdered by Davis Bloom, gets a pipe through his chest. Talk about a shot in the head. People complain about BVS. Let's complain about Smallville. Turns out that was Henry James Olsen, his older brother. And at the end of the episode, Chloe goes and gives this kid his camera, like, oh, you must be Jimmy's brother. This is his camera. Go be Jimmy Olsen. It's like, are you serious? And then the fight is terrible. Like, the fight, Clark doesn't even throw a punch. He gets hit like 2 or 3 times by Doomsday, and then they like super leap into a cavern. And then, anyway.
Oh, dear.
So here's the thing. I love Smallville. I can complain about it. I can complain about anything you guys want me to. Okay. Mm. But anyway, the point is there's a lot of connective tissue between the DCEU and Smallville. And there it is. But
did you see that he's working on another cut now?
Yes. So apparently, the aspect ratio that Zack Snyder has chosen to use for Justice League, he is re-editing Batman v Superman with that same aspect ratio. Which is very interesting to me because they had to have shot it a certain way, like with IMAX framing in mind. I can only assume that he shot these movies in the way James Cameron shoots movies, or at least used to, which is an open mat technique, which means like
right.
he's just giant image. Like you could,
and then you
the
cut
thinking
it
of the open mat shooting. Yeah, you could cut it side. You could cut it for 4x3 mm-hmm. for because back then we had 4x3 TVs, or you could cut it for 16x9 for like movie theaters. So sometimes the 16x9 does not look as well framed as the 4x3 because of that open mat technique. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard of anyone else doing that but James Cameron, but you know, Zack Snyder's apparently doing it, and apparently he's gonna do it with BVS, so we'll have to watch it again, another version. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder whether he's gonna play around with what's actually in it, or is it just gonna be that, you know, correcting some colors or whatever, I don't know. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he's doing with it.
I love alternate versions of anything. I'm all about mm-hmm. it, so just bring it on. And hey, do it for Man of Steel too. Just finish the trilogy, right? If this is it, so
yeah.
But yeah, there's Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice. We, you know, it's something that will be talked about forever, really. Because I hope we're wrong, Tom. But I think for the foreseeable future, other than Justice League, of course, coming up, this will be the only time we see these two characters together. Two of the greatest characters in comic books, no doubt.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, really enjoyed talking to you again about another Zack Snyder DCEU installment. We'll be back tomorrow in our continuing Snyder Week to talk about kind of the theatrical Justice League, some of the other movies, kind of a flyover of where things are, where things ended up, and kind of where we hope things to be leading up to the big release this week as of this release of the podcast for Zack Snyder's Justice League. But until then, where can people find you out there on the internet?
First of all, thank you so much for having me again, Zach. I love talking about this stuff, man. And I know you're an even bigger fan than me. And, you know, listening to your podcast about this stuff, hearing you and Lance talk about it, it brings me a lot of joy. So it's nice to be sat here in the seat talking about it with you. So thank you, man.
Oh, for sure, man. Thank you.
And if anyone wants to hear my stuff, it's over at thetwilightzonepodcast.com.
Alrighty, as for me personally, I'm on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach, host of another podcast called Franchise Fatigue over at UFP Earth. You can find us on Twitter at Franchise Fatigue, talking about movies, remakes, reboots, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued. And finally, for the podcast here, we're Always Smallville with one S, always hold on to Smallville on Facebook, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, we'll be back tomorrow talking about the DCEU as it stands, leading up to Zack Snyder's Justice League. But until then, always hold on to Smallville and all this other stuff. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, Darren Kirsch, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ Duena, Jason Skipper, Nathan Rochacher, Mateo Jarrell Santiago, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Joe McIndo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Rachel Miller, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Idzfoppen, Alex Ramsey, Patrick Bravo, Jason Davis, Christopher Brewer, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kant, Alana Gibbs, Patricia Carrillo, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGelly, Keith Falls, Jay Pocket, Cody Thomas, and Lauren D. Thank you so much to all these patrons. You too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.